The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop, looking out over London.
Good night, and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight. With Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs. Will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
All right, welcome to a Wednesday. It's the day before Thanksgiving. And we're here live. I was going to open yesterday's show with this clip, but I couldn't because I had to play If It Were Up to Me, I'd Take Away the Guns, because there were three shootings on Monday. I know, the news didn't cover them because they weren't mega shootings. There weren't 30 people killed or 10 people killed or, you know, four, I guess, is not enough to merit continuous coverage. Anyway, so this is Stephen Colbert from Monday night. You know, he's so current on the news that we'll do a twofer today.
Can you envision a situation well into your second term where you think that you're so good for the country and so essential for the progress of the country that you would try to amend the Constitution so you could serve a third term?
Chris, what are you doing? Ixnay on the hesitant prey for Iflay.
Now, he said he's not going to do it, right? Trump said he's not going to do it, and we know he never lies. Mm-hmm. Wallace then moved on to Trump's acting attorney general, Matt Whitaker, and Whitaker's history of criticizing the Russia investigation.
Did you know, before you appointed him, that he had that record and was so critical of Robert Mueller?
I did not know that. I did not know he took views on the Mueller investigation as such.
If he didn't know about his views on the Mueller investigation, why did he hire him?
Look, we need a new attorney general. Get that masculine toilet guy. At my age, every time I sit down, the whole golf bag ends up in the water trap, if you catch my drift.
There's one person who doesn't believe Trump's appointment of Whitaker was accidental. The next House Intelligence Committee chair and man who'd mistakenly thought the temperature would be taken orally. Adam Schiff. Now, Congressman Schiff has said publicly that Trump installed Whitaker to hobble Mueller's investigation. So Trump responded in a measured tone,
"So funny to see little Adam Schiff talking about the fact that acting Attorney General Matt Whitaker was not approved by the Senate, but not mentioning the fact that Bob Mueller, who was Agavele, was not approved by the Senate."
Yes, because the special counsel doesn't require Senate approval, unlike Attorney General. You can't just use Senate confirmation to discredit anyone you've decided you want to get rid of.
Yeah, what he said.
But let's not gloss over the fact that the President of the United States referred to a congressman as little Adam Schiff. Ugh, what a miserable piece of Schiff. Now, for the record, according to this network's rules, I am only allowed to say that word when the president's tweet appears on screen, like so. At which point I can totally say it. Am I going to take advantage of that opportunity? Is Adam Schiff in the woods?
I love Stephen Colbert. Yes, one of the many things that I'm grateful for this day before Thanksgiving is Stephen Colbert, that, you know, the Colbert Report may be history, but he gives us good political humor each weeknight that's timely and topical. So that bit was that was from Monday night. Again, I was going to play Tuesday morning. Now, I found another thing that was last night that encapsulates the news of the day. Now, I do What's News, right? But I got to tell you that Stephen Colbert does the news, but does it in a way that we can laugh about. And since we've got time today, because it's the day before Thanksgiving, we got a twofer of Colbert for you to give us the giggles before the show officially begins. Uh-oh. Oh, it would help if I did this.
Trump explained how fortunate these birds were.
Thanksgiving is a time of great American traditions, and today we continue a very special one when a lucky turkey gets a presidential pardon. That turkey is so lucky. I've never seen such a beautiful turkey. Yeah.
Yes, it's so beautiful. If it wasn't my dinner, perhaps I'd be dating it. Right over there.
Good so one.
Delicious. You like that?
Now, Trump might want to pardon someone else because we just learned that senior advisor to the president, Ivanka Trump, used a personal email account to send hundreds of emails about government business last year. This is really damaging if anything mattered anymore. Ivanka's attorney released a statement saying, Ms. Trump sometimes used her personal account, almost always for logistics and scheduling concerning her family. See, totally innocent until you remember her family is the president. Today, the president also pardoned Saudi Arabia. See, the CIA is preparing a report that is expected to tie the brutal murder of journalist Jamal Khashoggi to Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, but the president got out in front of the CIA today and released a statement on Khashoggi's killing. It starts out with a calm, reassuring message, "The world is a very dangerous place." It is now. Apparently, you can kill a Washington Post journalist and the president don't give a damn. Because Trump's official presidential decision on who is to blame for this murder is a resolute, He wrote, "Our intelligence agencies continue to assess all information, but it could very well be that the Crown Prince had knowledge of this tragic event. Maybe he did, and maybe he didn't."
God.
Did Donald Trump just knowingly provide cover for a murderous autocrat?
Hmm?
Maybe he did, maybe he didn't.
Oh.
Maybe he did. That's written. Someone wrote that down. Someone actually typed that. Maybe he did, maybe he didn't. That statement informs us in no way. A magic eight ball would have taken a firmer stance. There is gobs of evidence that the prince was involved in this murder. One State Department official said, "The idea that it goes all the way to the top is blindingly obvious." And I'm surprised Trump can't see that. He is known for looking at things that are blinding. And even though Trump's statements calls the murder a horrible crime, he still managed to throw some shade on the victim, saying, "Representatives of Saudi Arabia say that Jamal Khashoggi is an enemy of the state." Yeah, enemy of the state. Sounds like a bad guy. I mean, not Jim Acosta bad, but still pretty scary. And in the face of this transparent, nay, audio-taped human rights violation, the president reminded us that you can't put a price on human life, but he can. "The kingdom agreed to spend $450 billion in the United States. If we foolishly cancel these contracts, Russia and China will be the enormous beneficiaries. It's like the old story. First they came for the journalists, and I said nothing. Next they came with a bag of money, and I said thank you."
And that, ladies and gentlemen, is what Donald Trump is all about. It's not America first, it's Trump first. He doesn't give a shit about the country. He gives a shit about his pocketbook. Oh, and making sure he appears as the most powerful man in the world when he just comes across as the biggest jerk in the world. I mean, the whole world is laughing at us. Obviously, I'm not thankful this day before Thanksgiving for our president. I am thankful, though, for all the people who came out and voted, and the fact that the House of Representatives will be under Democrats' control again in just, you know, a month and a half or so. So those are things to be thankful for on a day like today. The phone lines are open should you care to, call in. 954-889-6410 is the regular phone number. You can always Skype directly to Nicole Sandler, all one word, and tell us what you're grateful for today. Because, you know, there's the thing, you know, I go through depression, and one of the things that's supposedly a good thing to do when you're feeling down is to count your blessings. Because we tend to harp on the things that are bad in our lives instead of concentrating on the good. So, you know, that's one thing and one reason to appreciate Thanksgiving, because it's a day that makes you take stock of the good things that are going on. Sometimes there's not a whole lot of good going on, but you consider them anyway. Now, Thanksgiving is my favorite holiday, not so much because of Thanksgiving, but because of what I did on Thanksgiving 18 years ago, and we'll get to that in just a few minutes. We will. But first, you know, there's a lot of news going on, so we'll start with what's news, and we'll do it live.
I read the news today, oh boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Well, two seismic news stories broke yesterday. First, Donald Trump issued a statement about the killing of American resident and Washington Post journalist Jamal Khashoggi, in which he essentially said that the United States will continue to back Saudi Arabia even if the Crown Prince, Mohammed bin Salman, ordered the killing. CNN has more.
In a stunning White House press release exonerating Saudi Arabia and the murder of Washington Post writer Jamal Khashoggi, President Trump seemed to dismiss reports indicating Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman was involved in the killing, writing, "Maybe he did and maybe he didn't." The statement coming just before the president was to receive a report from the CIA about the murder. A senior U.S. official says the CIA has assessed the Crown Prince directed the murder of Khashoggi. And just a few days ago, Vice President Pence said everyone involved would be held to account.
The United States is absolutely committed to ensuring that all of those responsible are held accountable.
The president has been steadfast in his commitment to the Saudis as allies, and this is just the latest show of support.
At the same time, we do have an ally, and I want to stick with an ally that in many ways has been very good.
The statement points to the economic ties between the two countries. Quote, the kingdom agreed to spend and invest $450 billion in the United States. This is a record amount of money. But the State Department says the U.S. has only received $14.5 billion as part of the deal. The statement coming after weeks of measured rhetoric about the role the Crown Prince may have played in the murder, going against evidence from the American intelligence community.
He told me that he had nothing to do with it. He told me that, I would say, maybe five times.
Yeah. While the president says members of Congress may go a different direction when it comes to repercussions for Saudi Arabia, he's also downplaying any further evidence. The White House writing, quote, we may never know all of the facts surrounding the murder of Mr. Jamal Khashoggi. In any case, our relationship is with the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia.
Asshole.
Yeah, sorry. Keith Olbermann just keeps sneaking in here every once in a while to call Donald Trump an
asshole.
Yeah. Anyway, then last night, the New York Times broke a bombshell reporting that Donald Trump wanted to order the Department of Justice to prosecute his political enemies. MSNBC's Ari Melber explains.
Breaking news on the most significant legal scandal to hit this White House since the report that Donald Trump tried to fire Bob Mueller. This is truly a bombshell. President Donald Trump tried to order the Justice Department to prosecute not one, but two of his biggest adversaries, Hillary Clinton and James Comey. This story breaking in the New York Times. The story is that in the spring, Donald Trump told his White House counsel, Don McGahn, that he wanted the DOJ officials to explicitly prosecute Hillary Clinton and James Comey. So that right there is a potentially illegal act, and that is quite important given that obstruction is still under investigation in this White House. Now, what happened next is also important. Don McGahn, according to this New York Times report, refused and then went on to try to show Donald Trump in detail why this was not only a bad idea, but a potentially impeachably bad idea. He had his White House lawyers write this memo that you're looking at, basically that is described in the Times, saying that if they went forward with this, the consequences would be damaging and, yes, would include, quote, possible impeachment. Now, that right there is a big deal. It is usually, of course, Donald Trump's critics and adversaries who are talking about his potential impeachment. And we don't even know if Donald Trump read that memo, but we do know, according to the New York Times, that it was his own lawyers and his chief counsel, Don McGahn, saying, Mr. President, if you do this, you could be impeached. And that's not all. The Times reporting that Donald Trump would go on to continue to privately agitate for these investigations of Hillary Clinton, obviously his chief rival in politics, and James Comey, his former FBI director. Now, this news, I want to be clear with you, is a scale way beyond anything else we have seen in legal controversies with Donald Trump. And that's saying something.
Yeah, it is, because, you know, he's done ridiculously unethical and, I hate to use the word crooked, but it fits, and despicable things as president. Again, looking out for his own self-interests rather than the country. Anyway, Trump left the White House yesterday after pardoning the turkeys to come down here to Florida, to Mar-a-Lago. And he did shout with the press over the helicopter noise. When he said of Khashoggi's murder and the CIA findings that Mohammed bin Sultan ordered it, or what's his name, MBS, that he ordered it, what did Trump say about that?
We put out a statement on Saudi Arabia, which I guess most of you have seen, and we'll see how that all works out. It's a very complex situation. It's a shame, but it is what it is.
It is what it is? I know we played it yesterday during Laffy's tweet spot, but oh my, I cannot believe. And I should. I mean, nothing he says should shock me anymore, but I can't believe he said it. Regarding another government, ostensibly an ally of ours, murdering a legal American resident journalist for the Washington Post, and Trump says it is what it is? Oh, my God. As for his decision to stand by Saudi Arabia and do nothing about their murder of an American journalist, Trump said this.
It's about America first.
It's about America first.
They're paying us $400 billion plus to purchase and invest in our country.
No, they're not.
That's probably the biggest amount ever.
It's a lie.
To the United States.
Don't you believe the CIA?
They didn't make a determination. And it's just like I said, I think it was very, maybe he did. Maybe he didn't.
Oh, my God.
They did not make that assessment.
Yeah, so he believes Mohammed bin Sultan, or whatever the fuck his name is, but he doesn't believe his own CIA. This is what he does. He believes Putin, but doesn't believe his own intelligence community. The man is, I think he's guilty of treason. I think he's putting Americans in harm's way. I just cannot wait until the Democrats take over the House of Representatives. And I wish it was 2020 already, because I want that fucker out of office. Anyway, the Democrats are preparing to take control of the House of Representatives when the 116th Congress comes into session in January. Yesterday, Congresswoman Marcia Fudge, remember her from Ohio? She said she no longer plans to challenge Nancy Pelosi for the role of Speaker of the House, which increases the likelihood that Pelosi will again become Speaker, because there's no one else to challenge her. As Fudge announced her support for Pelosi, Pelosi announced that Fudge will become chair of a now defunct subcommittee on voting rights and elections. You see, people are making deals. So this is what Marcia Fudge wanted. She wanted to get on this anti-voter suppression committee, and they're resurrecting this committee. The Republicans had killed it. And that's what Marcia Fudge got out of this. Good for her. This is what it's about. And so I think we'll see Nancy Pelosi rising pretty easily to speaker once again. By the way, the Democrats picked up yet another House seat, this one in Utah, where Democrat Ben McAdams beat Mia Love. Remember Mia Love? Oh, my God. Donald Trump. Well, at his press conference, he was asked about some of these elected officials who lost their re-election bids.
On the other hand, you had some that decided to let's stay away. I'm not sure that I should be happy or sad.
What an asshole.
I feel just fine about it. Carlos Curbelo.
Curbelo.
Mike
asshole.
Kaufman. Too bad, Mike.
Too bad, Mike.
Mia Love. I saw Mia Love. She'd call me all the time to help her with a hostage situation, being held hostage in Venezuela.
She's such an asshole.
But Mia Love gave me no love.
Oh, my God.
And she lost.
Well, she did now.
Sorry
about
that, Mia.
Too bad, Mia.
And Barbara Comstock was another one. I mean, I think she could have won that race, but she didn't want to have any embrace.
She didn't want the embrace.
For that, I don't blame her.
I don't blame her either.
But she lost, substantially lost. Peter Roskam didn't want the embrace. Eric Paulson didn't want the embrace.
Didn't want the embrace.
And in New Jersey,
the kiss
I think
of death
could have done well, but didn't work out too good. Bob Eugen, I feel badly because I think that's something
what?
That
what
could
an
have
asshole.
Been won. That's a race that could have been won. John Faso, those are some of the people that, you know, decided for their own reason not to embrace whether it's me or
no, it's
what
you.
We stand
it is
for,
you. It's exactly
what we stand
you.
For. Meant a lot to most people.
No, it didn't. Most people did not want the fucking embrace. There were the smart ones. And actually, you know, oh, God, we know Democrats won, big time won, and we're sitting there still winning seats. I just got to say, every time I hear him speak, I think Keith comes into my mind.
Asshole.
So I got to stop down in the middle of What's News for a song. We haven't done this in a while, and it's just begging to be played.
I want to tell you a story about the brand.
Asshole.
It's a brand new story about the brand new world's biggest asshole.
Asshole.
Asshole. His name is
Donald Trump.
And he's the new world's biggest asshole. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. All right. There's more news we can get to. I just had to get that out of the way because he's such an asshole. Oh, my God, he's such an asshole. Okay. Last night was the one and only debate between Cindy Hyde-Smith and Mike Espy. They're the candidates for the Senate seat from Mississippi. Not only did Hyde-Smith demand, this is after she made her ridiculous statements about she was trying to compliment a friend of hers. And she said in public, mind you, that she likes him so much that if he invited her, she'd sit in the front row at a public hanging in Mississippi, the world capital of lynchings back in the civil rights era. Yeah, this same woman who then released a picture of herself wearing a Confederate hat. But she's not a racist or anything. Oh, no. Anyway, so they had a debate last night. It was not only did Hyde-Smith demand that there be no audience or outside press at the debate, in her closing statement, she actually gave the wrong date to vote.
I am so glad that I have the endorsement of President Donald J. Trump and the endorsement of Governor Phil Bryant. But the endorsement that's most important to me, that's most valued, would be your vote next Tuesday, the 22nd.
Next. Next Tuesday. November 22nd would
be tomorrow. What Rachel Maddow was laughing about is that the 22nd is tomorrow. It's Thanksgiving. She said that last night. This election is happening Tuesday, which would be November 27th. They're all idiots. They're just all idiots. Anyway, House Democrats now say they'll investigate the email practices of Ivanka Trump, who admitted this week that she used a personal email account to conduct government business in 2017 while functioning as an unpaid advisor to her father. She said no classified material was in her communications. You know what I say? Lock her up. In other news, Acting Attorney General Matthew Whitaker, who has no business being within 5 miles of the AG's office, he's revised his ethics disclosure forms at least 5 times since he was appointed. His financial disclosures reveal he took $1.2 million in salary from a so-called charity organization. It was actually an organization that took aim at Democrats. It was anything but a charity. And he took $1,750 in legal fees from a dubious, now shuttered marketing company accused of fraud. Nice guy. Again, this right there, this Matthew Whitaker thing is I think, going to be the beginning of the end of Trump. All right, there's more news, but before we get to that, let's go to the phones. I believe we have our pal Jason and Simi calling in. Is that you?
Yes, indeed. Now, I want you to have a good Thanksgiving, but yes. I want to give a little... I know sometimes you can get a little dour, particularly because you live in Florida.
Yeah.
But I want to give a little perspective here to you.
Okay.
Number one, yes, you did lose your senator. You did lose the governor.
We didn't lose a governor. We had Rick Scott before. We should have picked up the governor's seat with Andrew Gillum, but he didn't win.
Well, just remember this. Out of that disaster, well, not disaster, those losses, you won something. You won 1.4 million people got the right to vote
yes,
back.
Yes, they did. They certainly did.
And in 2 years, that could make a significant difference.
Mm-hmm.
So while it was, you win a few, you lose a few, that was good. Now, I also want to mention about Georgia.
Yes.
Stacey Abrams should have won. We know it was stolen. That is pretty demonstrable. But I want to make a point here. Sometimes you lose by winning and win by losing. And in this case, she lost. But her national profile has gone through the roof.
Mm-hmm.
And now the right has created a monster, because now she has this issue about the voter suppression in Georgia, and now she has a platform to fight it.
And you know what? Not only that, Georgia has another election coming up as well. This is this one for Secretary of State. And Brian Kemp, who is the new governor, was the Secretary of State. And he was the one who purged all those names from the voter rolls, who closed polling places. Now, the Democrat can win and probably will. And the Democrat, whose name I don't know, I'm sorry, can fix things in Georgia so that in 2020, it'll be a much fairer election.
But what my point is, the losses can also account in the long term be wins, because now it has shown people that, one, Democrats can win,
mm-hmm.
which is always a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
But number two, it gives us a reason to fight, because our victory, while it was sweet, was nowhere near what we wanted. And I believe this can be the two compelling issues of Democratic Party.
Thank you. I was about to correct you.
Watching too much Fox.
Uh-huh.
What I want to say is they have two winning issues for 2020. One, health care.
Mm-hmm.
That is something the Republicans, it's like kryptonite to them. And number two is voter suppression. These are critical issues that can bring the Democratic coalition together.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I see, I know some people were upset about the losses we had with Beto and all of that, but I believe that these losses can also in the long term be wins.
Yep.
Because it will get people going. So even in Florida, you can have, there may be long-term wins here. Now, as far as the orange-faced, anus-mouthed clown is concerned, I believe what we're seeing right now is, I believe the horror of what is about to happen to them is dawning upon them. Because what will happen is that there is nothing in this world that I will not pop popcorn for than seeing any one of them in front of a senator, in front of a congressional committee, under oath. And I believe that's something else we should say
mm-hmm.
to all our representatives. Everybody from this administration testifies under oath.
Right.
I want to see this ridiculous fool who's at the Department of Justice, Betsy DeVos. I would kill to see her under oath for about 11 hours.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what we have to look at is not that it wasn't a complete win, but right now the wind, however, is at our back. And I believe also that I know that you and Howie Klein go on about it. I think the wind also is going to make some changes in the House. I mean, Nancy Pelosi, smart woman, whatever you may say, is going to have to make some adjustments.
She already is. She's already cutting deals with some of the progressives, because there's a great piece in The Intercept today, at The Intercept, by David Day, and I asked him to join us today. He's with family, but hopefully he'll come on maybe Wednesday when we're back next week. But talking about the power that the Progressive Caucus has and the deals they're making with Nancy Pelosi, and it's a fascinating piece. But yes, the Democratic, the Congressional Progressive Caucus is the biggest caucus aside from the two parties in
that's
Congress.
True.
Mm-hmm.
But the other point, if I might make, is in the Senate. Now, I just want to say right now, the Republicans have the Senate and Mitch McConnell and all that. But you also have to look, they're looking ahead too. In 2 years, 21 of them are up for re-election, and many of them are from blue to purple states.
Yeah, the Senate map favors the Democrats next time, where it truly favored the Republicans this time. Considering how bad the map was for Democrats, they actually did okay.
They did. Yep. But what I'm trying to see is, I think what you may see as we get closer to this is that some of them are going to start thinking that they're going to go out for survival. Now, you'll have the numbnuts like Senator Lindsey Beauregard Graham, doing this thing, because if he thinks he's going to try and investigate Hillary in this climate again, mm-hmm. I wouldn't do that if I were you.
Yeah, well, they're talking about it. Anyway, Jason, I got to run. I got stuff to do.
Yeah, go. But have a good Thanksgiving.
Thank you. You too. Thanks for calling and checking in. All right. From the Peanut Gallery. All right. Two more quick stories, and then we'll move on with the show. I am in Florida. Four of the students who survived the school shooting at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida, in February. This got like no news coverage at all. They received an International Peace Prize for their activism against gun violence. David Hogg, Emma Gonzalez, Jacqueline Corin, and Matt Deitch yesterday received the 2018 International Children's Peace Prize in a ceremony in Cape Town, South Africa. And Archbishop Desmond Tutu presented the prize to them. It was from the youth advocacy organization Kids Rights. How cool is that? David Hogg this morning tweeted out something about they started out as 25 kids on a living room floor, and now they're in South Africa receiving the International Children's Peace Prize. That's pretty fucking awesome. And Donald Trump yesterday submitted his written answers to his take-home test from special counsel Robert Mueller, obviously related to the investigation of possible collusion between Trump associates and Russians. So to quote Trump, we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens with that. He says he wrote all the answers. His lawyers didn't. It was all him. And that's a look at what's news for now. Of course, it changes. That's why I tend to do it live during the show. All right. Today is the day before Thanksgiving. And I mentioned at the top of the show that Thanksgiving is my favorite holiday. And the reason is because 18 years ago, in the year 2000, Thanksgiving fell on November 23rd. On November 23rd, 2000, I was in a courtroom in the little village of Karakastak, Kazakhstan, pleading with a judge there to let me adopt this little precious girl that I had met 2 days earlier at the orphanage in Karakastak. It was 18 years ago this week that I was over there in Kazakhstan to adopt my daughter, Allison. Now, every year in November, I talk about this. November is National Adoption Month, and this goes way back. I was fired from WINZ, then Miami's progressive talk station, before Clear Channel had to flip it to the fourth sports talk station in town. But it was a progressive talk station, 940 WINZ, and I was working there. And I had always, in my other radio stations, I always did something in November on National Adoption Month because it's a great way to expand your family. Anyway, so I was trying to think, who can I get on to talk about adoption? And I didn't know. And I got an email from a listener, this guy, Robert LaMarche, who told me he works at an adoption agency. And he gave me this whole pitch on why I should do a show on adoption in November for National Adoption Month. And I wrote him back and I said, you didn't have to convince me, great minds think alike. And I was looking for someone to come on and talk about adoption. So this is something we've done every year since then. Robert has been on the air with me a bunch of times. Last year, though, I was getting ready to call him and I got a message from him saying he was in excruciating pain and going to the hospital. This is while I was on the air. I had nobody to go to. It was like not a good day for me, but it was a worse day for him because it turned out he had kidney stones. So I can't hold that against him. So we'll take a very quick break and we'll come back on the other side and talk to Robert LaMarche about adoption. And I'll tell you a little bit more about my story and where you can find my journal and all that stuff. Because I decided to share our story if it convinces one more person or one more family that adoption is the way to go. There are kids all over the world who need forever families. So anyway, that's my thought. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll check in with Jim Hightower, come back on the other side with Robert LaMarche and talk about, again, why Thanksgiving is my favorite holiday. We'll be right back.
Thanksgiving raises an interesting question about immigrants. I'll tell you about it today on Hightower Radio. Thanksgiving, let's eat. America's most food-focused holiday traces its roots back to the abundant feast that pilgrims and Indians enjoyed together in the fall of 1621. Only half of the Mayflower Pilgrims who had arrived at Plymouth Rock the previous December survived their first year in the New World. New, of course, only to those undocumented immigrants from England, not to the local citizens. Still, to celebrate and offer thanks for their survival, the newcomers planned a communal meal following the fall harvest. And, in appreciation for being taught by the Wampanoag people how to raise corn and gather the region's seafood, they invited Massasoit, the tribal leader, to join them. He did, surprising the host by arriving with 90 members of his community. But the Wampanoag party didn't come empty-handed, bringing much of the fare for what became a three-day banquet featuring venison, duck, geese, wild furkeys, Wampanoag for gobblers, eels, mussels, lobster, gooseberries, plums, cornmeal pudding, popcorn balls, who knew, barley beer, and fortified wine. And you thought you overate at Thanksgiving. But this was not the first precursor of our annual November Foodapalooza. Texans assert that it began near El Paso in 1598, when the Manso and Piro tribes roasted ducks, geese, and fish over an open fire to give sustenance to a lost and bedraggled group of Spanish colonizers. Meanwhile, Floridians insist that the firstest of all Thanksgivings was in 1565, when the Timucuan people shared a stew of salt pork and garbanzo beans with Spanish settlers at St. Augustine. This is Jim Hightower saying, these interesting tidbits raise an equally interesting question for us to ponder this Thanksgiving. What would have happened to those pilgrims and Spanish settlers if the Native Americans had Donnie Trump around to build a big, beautiful wall?
Need an antidote to the progressive blues? Want some good news about how grassroots folks are rebelling against the corporate powers and winning? Well, here's an easy-to-swallow pill for you, the Hightower Lowdown. Hightower's monthly newsletter will give you the lowdown, even as it lifts you up. It's 4 pages a month, jam-packed with facts you can use, actions you can take, and Jim's own Texas humor, all for only $15 a year. To become a lowdowner, go to HightowerLowdown.org.
The Nicole Sandler Show is 100% listener-supported. Have you given yet? Nicole decided not to put her show behind a paywall, knowing that many can't afford the luxury of paying for a podcast. But if you're able to, she needs your financial support to continue doing this. Consider a monthly subscription. Give when you can. Just visit NicoleSandler.com/donate. Remember, she can't do this without you.
This is a huge, huge issue.
And we're talking about it. The Nicole Sandler Show on Progressive Voices and NicoleSandler.com.
All right, we are back. As I mentioned earlier, November is National Adoption Month. And something that I've been doing, probably since I brought my daughter home 18 years ago, is every November I've gone on the air and done at least one segment about the wonders of expanding your family through adoption. And as I told you, back when I was at 940 WINZ here in South Florida, before they went to sports, I was contacted by a listener pitching me on the idea of doing a show about adoptions for National Adoption Month, and thus began my long friendship with Robert LaMarche, who is the executive director of ACF Adoptions here in South Florida. They're at adoptionflorida.org. Hey, Robert. Uh-oh, are you there? Uh-oh, I think I lost him. He was there. Let me call him again. Oh, I hate it when this happens. He probably heard me talking and I wasn't answering him, so he hung up. But we'll get him back now.
Hello?
There he is. Hey, Rob. It's Nicole Sandler calling. How are you doing today?
Not Rob, unfortunately.
Oh, no.
It's Jason from Simi Valley.
Oh, my. I called the wrong number. Okay. Sorry, Jason.
Hey, sorry. No problem.
Bye. Yeah, it's live radio and All right. I got to put the number back in here again. Bear with me. I just did it a few minutes ago. Radio without a producer. All right, so now we'll try it. Third time's a charm, you know, they always say. So we're calling Robert LaMarche, who's the executive director of ACF Adoptions at adoptionflorida.org, and hopefully he'll pick up here. Such good radio.
You're not Rob. Reach Rob.
What?
It's Jason again.
It is not.
Swear to God.
Okay, because this is weird, because I'm calling. It says the number I'm connected to is a 954 number.
I'm not joking. I swear to God.
I believe you.
Live radio. It's awesome.
And there's no sound on YouTube. Oh, my God. Everything is messed up. Hold on, YouTube. I'll be right with you. Oh, man. Oh, man. I need a few days off for Thanksgiving. Bear with me. bear with me. All right. YouTube, your sound should be back now. And you haven't missed anything, YouTube, because everything is going haywire on my computer here. I got to tell you, this is weird. So I'm going to try to call Robert LaMarche again. But what happens is when I call him, I'm getting this is the number I want. Let's try this again. Let's see what number it's dialing. We'll see if this works. YouTube should be back on now. If this doesn't work, then I truly give up. Then the gods are trying to tell me something. Hello?
You've reached Jason from Simi Valley again.
Oh, my God. Okay. I'm gonna close out Skype, and I'm going to restart it, because obviously it's...
Have a better day, ma'am.
Thank you. Oh, my God. All right. Now it's showing I'm still connected with a 954 number. This doesn't make any sense. I know this is such good radio. You know what? I'm going to try it one more time. I know the audio's back. I fixed that. I screwed up everything else today, but I did fix that. Okay, so I'm going to call. Let's do this. You know what? Let me play. Here's what we'll do. We'll take a real break. I'm going to figure out why I can't get Robert LaMarche on the line. We'll check in with Brad and Desi in the Green News Report, and we'll come back. Again, the delay just adds to the excitement of it all, doesn't it? It's just telling me I really need another day off. Thank goodness tomorrow's Thanksgiving. All right. We'll be back on the Nicole Sandler Show. Don't go away.
It's Tuesday, November 20, 2018.
Crews are scouring this scorched landscape to recover DNA and identify the dead before the rain moves in.
A turn in the weather is both good news and bad for California's wildfires. Trump administration uses California's tragedy to push logging in forests. Plus, network TV news mostly fails to connect the dots between historic fires and climate change.
All of those mostly failures and more straight ahead. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
You know, it's not time for finger pointing.
Very diplomatic of you, Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke.
And I will lay this on the foot of those environmental radicals. This is on them.
Well done, sir. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, it is going to be a very, very grim Thanksgiving for thousands of Californians this year, I'm afraid.
Indeed it is, but firefighters are finally making some headway in the historic wildfires in California. In Northern California, the death toll continues to grow from the Camp Fire, the deadliest wildfire in state history, with at least 79 dead as of airtime. More than 900 are still listed as missing, but officials do remain hopeful that number will drop as evacuees check in with government agencies. Rain is forecast for the next several days. That will help quash the fires, but it will also bring the threat of mudslides and debris flows in burn areas. And it will also make the search to identify remains in the rubble much more difficult. The rain will also help clear out some of the smoke from the fires, which has forced the closure of schools in the San Francisco Bay Area. Even the city's famous cable cars were shut down. Public health experts warn that exposure to the smoke can cause long-term damage to the lungs of millions of people in the region, particularly children. The fires in both parts of the state have displaced thousands of evacuees, exacerbating the state's already acute affordable housing crisis. FEMA Director Brock Long said the federal, state, and local governments are working together to find long-term housing for those made homeless and jobless by the devastating fires, who are now living in temporary shelters and even makeshift tent camps, a growing public health concern as winter cold and rains arrive. Long warned it will take years for these areas to recover.
There's not much to start with when it comes to the infrastructure, so the infrastructure is basically a total rebuild at this point.
That sounds a lot like what Brock Long said In Puerto Rico not very long ago, as I recall.
Exactly. Environmental journalist Brian Kahn of Earther.com notes that the evacuees' situation is similar to those of refugees from climate disasters in developing countries, and warned how California's story plays out will tell us a lot about how well prepared we are to deal with future extreme weather disasters. Mm. President Trump toured sites in California devastated by the fires over the weekend and again blamed California's forest management for the fires with a new bizarre reference to Finland.
They spend a lot of time on raking and cleaning and doing things and they don't have
any problem. No, they don't. The president of Finland told the New York Times his country is colder and wetter than California and they use well-funded comprehensive forest management and raking is simply not true. On MSNBC, Democratic Congressman Ted Lieu of Southern California debunked Trump's false claims.
If preventing wildfires were as easy as raking leaves, we would have done that by now.
Trump Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke went even further in an interview with right-wing Breitbart News.
It's not time for finger-pointing. I will lay this on the foot of those environmental radicals that have prevented us from managing the forest for years. And you know what? This is on them.
Well, thanks for not finger-pointing, Mr. Zinke.
Both state fire officials and scientists say Zinke and Trump are wrong. Hmm. Global warming is a major factor, causing hotter temperatures, dried-out vegetation, and year-round fire seasons. Forestry experts say that forest management is complex and requires adequate funding, which Trump has cut. Logging can actually make forests more susceptible to fast-moving wildfires. Other contributing factors include development in wildland areas and lack of updated building codes.
And which of Trump's executive departments is it that manages the U.S. Forest Service?
The Interior Department.
Under Secretary Ryan Zinke.
Correct.
Got it.
Finally, in what is now a familiar refrain, a new Media Matters analysis finds that the national broadcast TV news networks ABC, CBS, and NBC pretty much ignored the contribution of global warming in their coverage of the California fires, mentioning it only in about 4% of their coverage. However, a bright spot, local TV news stations did bring up climate change numerous times during their wildfire reporting.
Good on the local stations, same as it ever was from the networks. For much more on all of these reports and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us, follow us, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Same as it ever was. Same as it ever was. Same as it ever was. Same as it ever was.
You're listening to The Nicole Sandler Show on Progressive Voices and NicoleSandler.com.
All right, I'm back. We're calling Robert LaMarche yet again. I exited out of Skype and I went back in, so hopefully it'll work this time. Fourth time is...
Hello,
Robert LaMarche?
Yes, hi, Nicole.
Yay. Sorry, something really screwy happened with my phone in that every time I tried calling you, it would call the guy back, a caller who I had call in earlier. It kept calling him instead of you, even though it said I was connected to your number. It was the strangest thing. But we have
and
now...
you had enough of him already. So.
I did. Because so I was telling the listeners about how you and I met. It was more than 10 years ago because WINZ has been off the air for 10 years already. And I was doing the morning show over there and thinking about what to do to do a segment on adoption because November is National Adoption Month when you reached out and said you should do a thing on National Adoption Month. So we've been doing it ever since, except for last year when you had kidney stones. So hopefully.
Which happened moments before. And I'm not convinced you actually believe me, but it was true.
I didn't at the moment. I was just pissed because I'm going, what the hell do I do now? So anyway, we're all good. You these days, in fact, when we first met, you were going to law school. You were working as an adoption coordinator, but you were going to law school to rise up in the world. And you have. You're the executive director of, I want to make sure I get the name of the agency right. It is ACF Adoptions. The website is adoptionflorida.org. And you guys facilitate all kinds of adoptions, huh?
We do. We primarily focus on domestic adoptions. So moms who primarily who live in the state of Florida who are making voluntary adoption plans for their little ones.
Uh-huh. Yes. Okay. But you also, you do facilitate foreign adoptions. I mean, people know now that I adopted my daughter from Kazakhstan back in 2000. I can't believe it's been 18 years already. Time sure flies.
Right.
When I originally started on the whole adoption journey, I was planning on adopting from Russia. But right after... When I started the process, Vladimir Putin was elected president, and the first thing he did was shut down adoptions in Russia. They've gone up and down. They were back in effect for a while, and now I guess they don't do adoptions, foreign adoptions anymore?
It's been several years, but not to folks in the United States.
Uh-huh. Because it has to do with the Magnitsky Act, I believe. Anyway,
it does.
Right. So what is your you handle both ends, both young expectant mothers who decide that it's really not the right time for them to have a child, but they decided to carry the pregnancy to term and give the baby up for adoption. So you work with the mothers and you work with prospective families. Yes.
Yes, that is correct.
And so what are the hurdles
the family,
that people face?
The families
today?
Can be from anywhere. Mm-hmm. We're a Hague accredited agency, so we actually have families as far away as Switzerland, the Netherlands, Canada, who apply to adopt children actually from Florida.
Really?
Most people think about intercountry adoption as folks from the U.S. going abroad to adopt children. But there are a lot of folks from out of the U.S. who come to the United States to adopt. As well.
That's now, interesting. So there's no restriction against people from other countries adopting American kids and bringing them to wherever they live?
Right. Everybody has to be Hague compliant. There's a Hague Convention on Intercountry Adoption.
Right.
So as long as we're working with a Hague compliant country and we're a Hague compliant agency, the expected moms choose the families. So they're given the opportunity, of course, to pick a family that lives in Florida or elsewhere in the United States or abroad. And sometimes they pick families who live abroad for a whole host of reasons.
That's fascinating. Now, let me ask you about the foster care system in this country. America, the United States doesn't have orphanages, per se, like what I went to, where I got Allison from in Kazakhstan. They call it a baby home, but it's an orphanage. There used to be orphanages here, but they did away with those in favor of just foster care, right? Or are there group homes that are kind of
theory,
orphanages?
But there are group homes, and there are facilities that have children in them who would be better served in families. But nationwide, we have a crisis of not having enough foster homes.
Mm.
So there certainly are children in group care settings that are there only because there's not an approved family for them to go to, not because they necessarily need to be in any type of group care or therapeutic setting.
Right.
That was the case 10 years ago, or more than 10 years ago, when I met my son, who was in foster care.
Mm-hmm.
And it's definitely continued to be the case now. We have a lot more babies coming into care these days because of the opiate epidemic.
Oh, wow.
So there's a real shortage of foster homes. As you can imagine, it's a good idea to have a parent at home if you have a newborn who's been drug exposed going home to the family, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, in this day and age, there's not so many families who can afford to have somebody at home.
Right.
So that's part of the reason that there's a crisis. We have more little ones, babies, newborns coming into the foster system, and not as many people in a position to take them in to care for them. So we wind up having babies in state care that are in, you know, not the optimal placements for them.
Right.
And this is information I know from my colleagues in the field and just folks that I stay in touch with. You know, I'm not currently involved in any capacity with the Department of Children and Family, so I don't want to speak like I'm an expert.
Sure.
But this is information I believe to be true because of my friends and colleagues that are still in that field.
Wow. Okay, so there is a real need. And basically the reason we do this every year is to let people know you've offered yourself to answer any questions, whether people want to adopt through your agency or not. You'll help them navigate the system and answer questions. If people are just, you know, putting a toe in the water, Robert
Absolutely.
LaMarche will take your call or email or, you know, Facebook message, and he'll help
sure.
you. So how can people get a hold of you if they're interested in just asking some questions?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, just so people are clear, my familiarity with the foster care process, because I adopted both of my kids from foster care. My son is now 24. My daughter's 11.
Wow.
I know that's hard to believe. Uh-huh. But you and I both have adult children
I
now.
I know.
And I worked for many years, specifically in intercountry adoption, and I've been in domestic adoption for at least the last 6 years. So I can be reached in my office at 305-653-2474, or my email, which is rlamarche, L-A-M-A-R-C-H-E, at adoptionflorida.org. And as you said, I do this not to necessarily promote my agency or any particular route. I'm an adoption advocate. I'm a foster care advocate in the sense that I know there's a tremendous need for foster parents and for families to adopt older kids.
Mm-hmm.
And if I can be a resource for anybody in the community about navigating those waters, I'm happy to do it.
Awesome. So again, Robert LaMarche, take advantage of him. If it's something you're even thinking about, I mean, I understand people who go through IVF, you know, fertilization treatments because they want their own child. Let me tell you something. When you adopt a child, that child becomes your child. Allison couldn't be any more my daughter if I had spit her out. She is so my kid.
Right.
So it's just another alternative. And there's millions of kids out there who need a forever family. Robert LaMarche, thank you so much. It's always good to talk with you.
My pleasure.
And thanks for helping people.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving. Take care. To you, too. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. So, again, that's sort of a little public service thing that I do every year. Adoptionflorida.org is the website, or you can call 305-653-2474. I'll put all the information on my blog at NicoleSandler.com along with today's podcast. It'll be posted there. So the other thing that you can, if you're interested, when I was doing over in Kazakhstan, I kept a journal. In fact, I was programming a radio station in Los Angeles, and I really wasn't supposed to take all this time off, and I wound up being over in Kazakhstan for a month. So I would post the journal to the radio station website. So it was a whole public thing. Then after I got home, I updated it a few times. So it's a pretty lengthy, in-depth story. It's not only, you know, to share our story, but again, to let people know of the possibilities. 18 years, a lot has changed. Again, there are no American adoptions from Russia these days. I don't know what the system is in Kazakhstan. I know that when I was going through the process and I had to assemble my dossier, it's all in there in the journal. We dealt with the INS, Immigration and Naturalization Services. Well, INS is no more. It's now ICE, and I guess that's who prospective families have to go through. So it's a different process. But just to give you an idea of the, everything that's involved in it, it's there. And it's a heartwarming, good Thanksgiving kind of story. So you can get to it at NicoleSandler.com. When you get there, you go to, there's the menu, and it says home, then it says Nicole Sandler Show, and there's a pull down under that. And from the pull down under Nicole Sandler Show, you click on Nicole and Allison's adoption story, and just be prepared, you know, have Kleenex with you, because it is, it's moving. I tear up when I read it, and I wrote the thing and I lived it. I'll tell you, it's the hardest thing I've ever done. And kind of the best thing I've ever done was adopting my daughter. So, if you're thinking about starting a family and, the pregnancy isn't coming easily, there are other options. There's one other thing I want to share with you about November, and that is that November is also Lung Cancer Awareness Month. Now, that's something that I never dealt with ever until a couple of years ago when I was diagnosed out of the blue with lung cancer. It was a mistake. We found it by mistake. I was working with somebody who, and the situation wasn't going well. And this one day in particular, when we came to almost blows, I was so freaked out and upset that as I was driving home, I really thought I was having a heart attack. And it got worse and worse. We eventually went to the hospital, and the tests they do showed that it looked like I did have a heart attack. I wound up having an angiogram and I didn't, my heart is perfect, But what they did was they did a chest x-ray, and the chest x-ray revealed a mass in my lung, in my left lung, which was then removed. And basically, I'm 2 years and a few months cancer-free. So there's an organization, there's a website, savedbythescan.org, has lots of information on lung cancer, and will let you know if you're eligible for a scan to test you. But I went through it, and I wouldn't have been eligible because I haven't smoked in 15 years. I smoked cigarettes when I was a lot younger. I thought I was cool. Anyway, savedbythescan.org, it's one place you can go to get some information and just get checked. Okay. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving. We've got a lot to be thankful for. We can get into it a little more next week. In the meantime, don't eat too much. I'll see you on Tuesday. Thanks for listening, everyone. Have a very, very happy Thanksgiving. Bye.